I'm going to be presenting some material today, some of the observations of Carl Jung regarding the archetypes, how they appear in dreams, and how they tend to bring an inner message to us. There'll be a lot of material here, and if you need any references to this, although the material came from various Jungian sources, Man and His Symbols is one of the easiest references to read. And also, some of the science that's in here, some of the research I'll be showing you, is contained in Dream Language, which you can buy in the bookstore or get on Amazon. And it will also contain the materials in this slide, somewhat in the form that you'll see it. In order to talk about the inner message, I need to talk a little bit about the nature of our being and the way Jung saw that. Jung saw the nature of our being as consciousness with a large amount of unconscious being, in this particular case, below it. It's sort of like consciousness was floating on the surface of a huge lake, and underneath was a larger sphere of the unconscious. Now, in order to understand a little bit about what Jung thought about consciousness and unconscious, let me give you some examples of what we mean. Consciousness, as we know it, is somewhat of a focus. At any one point in time, we focus our consciousness on one thing. For instance, right now, you're focusing your consciousness on my talk, and as a result, you are recalling. You're storing some of that in memory in the unconscious. If I ask you to now look over to the door, the focus of your consciousness will change. And also the memory of what you see out there will be stored within the unconscious. If I ask you what happened to you yesterday, that memory of what happened to you will come into consciousness. So the conscious focus shifts, and it shifts in this realm that Jung called consciousness. Now, there's some other things that come from within the unconscious as well. However, just what I've shown you so far, just the storage of your memories, your experiences, etc., formed what Jung called the personal unconscious. But also, as we all experience, other things come into consciousness that may not have been a part of our experience, our lifetime experience. Some of these being when you get inspired to do something, intuition, creativity, and various other factors seem to well up from somewhere inside, outside of the experience, outside of what we've learned in this particular lifetime, perhaps dragging some of what we've learned with them. And Jung indicated that these come from, or much of these come from an area called the collective unconscious. Now, he went beyond that and indicated that the collective sort of floats on the sea of the collective, which tends to connect all of us. So at some level, whether it be at a biological level, or evolutionary level, mythological level, or perhaps at a spiritual level, he alluded to a connectivity at that collective unconscious level. And he called this model the psyche. He called this our psyche. And what he did was he gave various aspects of the psyche names. Ego was a name that had been around since Freud, but he indicated that the conscious, our understanding of who we are in our conscious realm, our belief of who we are, was termed the ego. Also, within the personal unconscious, some of this material that we collect over our lifetime tends to grow, particularly the suppressed stuff, the stuff we don't like about ourselves, tends to grow into a shadow-like construct. And the more we push that shadow down, the bigger it gets and tends to come out in ways and into our consciousness in ways that we don't necessarily like. Now, there's a positive aspect to the shadow as well. I'll be actually showing you some dreams here a little later that shows you the positive aspect of that. So it's not all negative, but it's not ego stuff. And what Jung indicated also is contained in the collective is something he called the self. Now, the greater self, he called this entire sphere of the psyche, but there was this self, which is a force within us. It's like an image of perfection within us that draws the ego within to understand all of who we can be. So it becomes a fourth, he called it individuation. As we become an individual, we use the self as a pattern for forming all we can be. Now, the self sometimes has trouble with the shadow getting through and getting the message through, but therein lies the dance in the unconscious. Now, he noticed that these elements that he's named, the ego, the shadow, the self, he had others too, persona and a number of other elements, but he indicated that these show up sometimes in our dreams and in the mythology of mankind as archetypes. And this is sort of a shortened version of some of the words he said about archetypes, but he's basically indicated these archetypes were patterns of balancing, integration, transforming forces emerging from the collective unconscious. They're patterns and forces. And he saw them common not only in our dreams, but in all our mythology, as Chelsea did a wonderful job of explaining. You saw how these archetypes found their way into the fairy tales of mankind. What Jung indicated was that there was this consciousness within. These things are conscious, particularly the consciousness of the self that is trying to individuate us, trying to focus us on all we can be. This knowing awareness appears in our dreams, guiding and integrating and centering the ego around what it is trying to achieve this inner growth. And it tends to try to focus the ego on the greater self. That's why you see a lot of centering type imagery and motifs in your dreams, and we'll get to that a little bit later. Now, this may seem like an interesting theory. We've heard a lot about it, but there is actual evidence now coming through brain scans, through science, that is very supportive of what Jung has said about the psyche and what's going on. You can actually touch and feel some of this stuff, although it goes beyond the physical. It still is reflected in the physical brain. For example, this is the conscious part of our brain, the cortical regions of the brain, which are responsible in Jungian terms for thinking and sensing, thinking more towards the front, sensing more towards the middle and the rear. We see things through the visual cortex towards the rear, for example. There is also an unconscious part of the brain that's responsible for a tremendous amount of processing of what goes on in our daily lives, particularly processing of emotion, processing of our memories, and intuition, such things as that. This all goes on at an unconscious level, but makes itself known, there's a tiny little arrow there, makes itself known into our consciousness from time to time as the processing takes place. So we feel feelings that are important for us to feel, for example. But the processing of those feelings and the comparison with early memories, etc., goes on behind the scenes. So there really is a conscious and unconscious brain that you can touch and feel. It's not just a theory. Now, when we fall asleep, notice the yellow parts, the parts that are glowing, are the parts that come active when we dream. The rest of the brain remains inactive. So we're not really totally asleep. Our brain is becoming conscious, but it's a different state of consciousness. And notice the most of the yellow is in the unconscious region. So dreams do come largely from the unconscious, as Jung indicated. The dream is stimulated first by the brain stem, and it stimulates an area of the brain called the limbic region. The limbic region, that lower part which has feeling and intuition in it, is responsible for processing memory and unresolved emotional events of the day, and basically important events of the day. It's also responsible for processing threats. It's what reacts or causes your reaction when something comes at you during the day that threatens you, either physically threaten you or threatens your sense of being. Somebody bawls you out or gets angry at you, causes you to react. And you react actually before you even think about it. The reaction is there. That's all done unconsciously. Now, what this indicates is because this part is so active in our dreams, most scientists now believe that dreaming is really a processing of these unresolved, very important emotional things that occurred during the daytime. And not necessarily negative emotions, they could be exciting things as well. Anytime you change, anytime you have a new realization, anytime you're thinking and believing something that's different than perhaps you're faced with in reality, these become these emotional events. Now, the other thing that occurs is your thinking is changed in the dream. Notice the part of the brain that's involved in thought has just a little bit of yellow. The rest of the thinking brain is offline. So what that comes out as in dreams is figurative thought. In other words, the bizarre becomes normal. You can walk through walls in dreams and fly, and shoes can talk to you. Because the rational references are inactive. That part of the brain, it doesn't care what goes on in the dream. It's not going to compare it. The filters are off. The other thing is, this part of the brain that's in yellow is called the anterior cingulate. And that part of the brain is responsible for resolving conflicts and actually trying to project solutions. And so this is one of the reasons why our dreams tend to be a little bit forward-looking, tend to try to solve problems, why we do get guidance and, quote, messages in dreams. The dreams are trying to resolve an issue, usually a conflict between an inner belief and an outer belief, or inner self and outer reflection of self, and it's trying to find a resolution. So there's the beginnings of why we get guidance and messages in dreams. And it also is a part of the brain that maintains a focus on the sense of self, and perhaps even the greater self, as Jung talked about. So here we have real parts of the brain you can touch and feel that function exactly as Jung said they should, exactly as Jung said dreams should. They work on unfinished business of the day, they focus on the sense of self, and they try to resolve conflicts and project solutions, in other words, guide us. Now, the interesting thing here, though, is that the anterior cingulate during the daytime has the whole outer world to deal with. You know, they can solve all the problems by thinking about it and by trying to resolve it. When you're asleep and dreaming, the anterior cingulate has to totally depend on internal information to solve the problems. So here's where it tends to turn to the collective, as Jung said. It not only taps on your memories and experiences, but it's now forced to tap into the collective to find information. So therein lies another clue as to why the guidance in dreams might come from a different or a higher source than one might tap into during the daytime. The next part of the brain that's active is the visual section. This part of the cortex is where the dream occurs, or where you see the dream and sense the dream. It's a sensing part of the brain. So dream imagery basically arises from those parts of the brain that are active. And it's interesting, this part with a little X down here, which is inactive, is your visual cortex, the part you see with. The part you see with is not active in dreams. The part that's active is what they call the associative cortex, the association cortex of the brain. It associates, it creates pictures and picture associations and metaphorical type pictures and actions based on representations of what is being processed at the deeper parts of the brain. So this is why your dreams form associations. This is why your pictures are representations. They're metaphors. They're parables, in a sense. They're pictures of what's being processed inside. That's why they're not literal. And all this supports Jung's thought, and Jung had no access to this information. He just observed things in dreams. So now the big question from this, is there really evidence of all this stuff in our dreams? John Sanford indicated in his book, Dreams, God, Forgotten Language, that there is an inner wisdom present in our dreams, superior to our conscious aims. Those are one of the statements he made. And at the same time, Jung indicated that this inner wisdom draws the ego within and to focus on the greater self. So let's take a look at a few dreams and see if we can see both John's truth and Jung's truth in some actual dreams. Now, here is a dream that the first part goes to support what John Sanford said. In this person's life, they had a belief that they were in a spiritual search, much like many of you are, and they believed that the truth lies within all us experts, all the experts and people who write books and whatnot. And so they were running around reading books and listening to talks and getting more and more confused because everybody says something a little different. So they said a prayer one night, please, God, show me the truth. And they got this dream. It says, I wandered all night looking for the book of truth. A wise old man sitting on the left pointed down a descending wooden spiral staircase. He said, truth lies within.
So here you see a wisdom in the dream, counter to the ego's own wisdom, the truth of life out there with the experts, telling the dreamer that it lies within. Well, the dream went on, and it went on to support what Jung said, that the dream draws the ego within to focus on the wholeness of the greater self. The dream continued. He said he descended down the stairs, and he saw nothing. He didn't see the Book of Truth down there. Until he acknowledged an angelic female on the left who pointed ahead of him, and suddenly appeared this pedestal with this golden book on it that he had not seen before. And so what we're tending to see here in the message in this dream, or at least the message this dreamer got out of it, was truth lies within, but not simply through the masculine need to feed the rational mind, reading the books, going to all the lectures, etc., but through accepting the intuitive feminine. And as this Psalm 46:10 says, be still and know that I am God. That's the truth that he was needing to get out of this. In order to really see the truth is not only go within, but to accept what's there. Now, according to Sanford also, he indicated that dreams evidence this higher wisdom that is superior to our conscious aims. In other words, counter to what we might believe on the exterior. Here's another example of that. This comes from a book, Robert Wagner, Lucid Dreaming, which is more of an exploration into consciousness than anything else. This particular lucid dreamer, he was a scientist, and his strong belief, scientific belief, was that the universe began with a big bang and it was going to end at some point in time. They learned that when they can go into their lucid dreams, rather than just flying around and having their will with the other characters in the dream, they learned that if they ask the dream a question, there is this silent witness behind the dream, they call it, this higher wisdom that will actually answer and take them on journeys based on the question they ask. And so he asked one night, he became lucid in the dream. He says, I want to find out what the beginning and the end of the universe looks like. He says, show me the beginning and the end of the universe. And a voice said, the universe has no beginning and no end. The universe is an everlasting cycle. Totally counter to his beliefs. So it was as if there was this other wisdom, a correcting wisdom behind the dream. This wisdom responds to us in all sorts of ways. One of the words people use is incubation. This is, in a sense, praying for a dream that will help you solve some problem in life. This happened to be my dream. This was very early in my career. My company was going out of business, you know, for mail. That could be a time of real crisis, and it certainly was for me. I get crazy when I don't have continuity of a career. So I asked my dreams for guidance as what to do. I really said, please tell me what to do. And I got a dream that night. It said, in the dream I was in the future. Not far future, but in the future. And I was in a balloon capsule being sent to the moon by NASA. I wondered how to operate this because I was inside the capsule with all kinds of controls and stuff like that. And I was panicking because I didn't know how to control it. You know, it's just typical of me. And their voice came down and says, you're not supposed to know how it works or to try to control. Just relax. And I woke up really for about the first time in my life just letting go and letting God. I mean, I'm just not that way. And I ended up, without even trying, being hired by the largest contractor of NASA, which was Rockwell at that time, so that fed into the dream a little bit, by just letting go. So the dreams do respond to incubation and prayer, often not that literally. It usually comes in a metaphor. This was one of the rare ones. It also responds to our spiritual needs. Here is a woman who was on her own spiritual quest, much like many of you, looking for spiritual enlightenment and was praying for spiritual enlightenment. You know, how do I become enlightened? And she had the following dream. This is more of a metaphor, but was beautiful. Become a perfect channel, and all things shall be given unto you. In other words, let go and let it come through. And sometimes this inner wisdom reveals cosmic visions, which are somewhat available to us all. It's not just exclusive to the prophets. Here's this same woman later on with a later dream, once she became more involved in allowing the wisdom to come through. And she asked another question about the meaning of life and souls and death, etc. And she got this dream. It's very Ezekiel-like. She said, I saw a wheel of fire, a strange wheel, endlessly turning, fire yet not fire, not material fire, The wheel was the wheel of time, and hovering above it were souls of all things created, much like a computer programmed to accept each in its time. Each one descended to the earth only when the opening appeared in the wheel. The vibrations at the opening were attuned to the vibrations of that particular soul. Then the same thing happened in a similar manner when they returned. Only when the opening appeared in the vibrations could the soul return. And I saw the wheel from above without wonder, as if it's something I had seen before and recognized. Now, very metaphoric in the nature of what's going on here, but a beautiful, beautiful vision that just came from nowhere out of the collective. So, let's explore the archetypes a bit. Now, archetypes originate from the unconscious, but when you see them in your dreams, they don't necessarily express personal issues or personal meanings in your dreams. But what they're doing there is they're exerting a very powerful influence on the ego, and use the dream ego in the dream to move in one direction or another. And they provide valuable clues to what we need for wholeness, to become the whole person, all we can be. And also the clues to the process taking place in the dream. So you don't try to get your personal meaning necessarily out of the archetypes, but they form these patterns that are very important to pay attention to. They come in the form of the self as the wise and guiding entity, a deity. We saw him as the one that said truth lies within. And they also come as the anima and animus, representative of an integration of our feminine and masculine, or an integration of parts of ourselves that need to be fulfilled in order for us to become whole. We saw that also in the dream where when the man descended to look for the book of truth, he could not recognize it until he accepted the feminine side. So there's an integration that comes with seeing this anima and animus in our dreams. And also the shadow. The shadow comes on sometimes as unexpressed potential, things that we haven't allowed ourselves to live yet. Hidden or rejected side of ourselves, parts of our being that we don't like, ways of acting we don't like, etc. And these are parts that need acceptance and integration to become whole. They sometimes get in the way of the self in trying to establish a wholeness, or at least get kicked up when that process takes place. Now here's an example. Here's a guiding deity type in a ritualistic centering activity. This person was very brave. They were in a culture in life where they wanted to take advantage of their natural talents. It was actually dealing with dream work. But they were in a culture, a Mideast culture, as a matter of fact, that did not allow women to do this, nor did it allow them to do it in a fashion that she was prepared to do so. So she was taking a major risk, physical risk to herself in doing this, but was so inspired to move into it, she got, she was afraid. Until she got this dream. She said, I dreamed of two women doing a ritual dance in an ancient arena. One of them holds a golden sword, has a golden statue encircled around her head, and the other woman a golden rope circling around her body. Their skins are also shining like gold, and their eyes are in deep emerald green. She goes on to say, the woman with the golden sword turns herself around a few times and looks in my eyes, holding the sword high. I feel that she wants me to know that I am free to take the golden snake and its power, and it is my time. She is looking directly into my eyes and not moving like a golden statue. And as she woke from that, she realized that she now had the power to move ahead with this new career. Interesting thing occurs sometimes with the shadow in dreams. I've noticed in many, many dreams, the shadow doesn't always come off as a scary character. Sometimes it comes off as a very guiding character. This is an example of that. Here was a person or man who said, there's no way I can resurrect my old talents, they're gone forever. You know, he had been able to do something in his earlier years, was very good at it, went on in later years, abandoned it, and yet the opportunity came up for him to express these talents once again. It's like, nah, that side of me is dead, I can't do it. He had the following dream. He says, I wandered through the desert and saw an old rusty car. I looked inside and found a man who was not moving. I was going to give him up for dead, but my unknowing companion, behind me and to the left, the shadow set, urged me to wake the man. He argued for the longest time in the dream, it's useless, the guy's dead. But he said, after much discussion, he reluctantly gave the man a shake inside the car. When he did, The man came to life, and so did the car, transformed into a brand new car. So here again, the shadow is trying to urge the man that this self was still with inside. You know, you just need to wake him up a little bit. Take a little, you quit arguing with yourself and get on with it. The next thing I wanted to talk about is, in terms of archetypes, is patterns that Jung recognized in dreams related to centering and integration and wholeness. He indicated that the cyclic patterns, these circular patterns, were focuses for the ego and the evolution of new centers for the personality coming forth. As you change and move, the ego finds a new center for the personality. These are some of the patterns that Jung talked about as appearing in dreams related to this process. Dreams tend to show you going from incomplete states to more complete states of wholeness. And the process you go through in doing that is often this centering process that shows up in these various ways in dreams. How many people have had tornadoes in their dreams? Okay, that's a spiral. That's a centering process. According to Jung, it was the material from the unconscious evolving into consciousness, or the ego going within the unconscious. He had counterclockwise and clockwise directions assigned to those. But it also shows up as circle dance. How many people have had circle dance in their dream? People dancing around in circles. And as things like the circle with the dot in the center, the circle with the cross in the center, these types of things. I did some content analysis on 26,000 dreams just recently from a large database at University of Santa Cruz. 35% or more of our dreams have these circular centering patterns in them. And 10% or a third of those actually have the center focused on in the dream itself. And this doesn't account for people's dreams of round things. This has to do with people saying things were round or circular or center, or I was in a circle dance, etc. So this motif is very strong in our dreams. And this idea of the desired state shows up as integrations between the conscious and unconscious self, the black and the white patterns in your dreams. Not I dreamed in black and white, but actual true black and white colors forming patterns can show the integration of the conscious and unconscious sides. And the attraction of opposites or integration of opposites, marriage, sex, things of that sort in your dreams can very well relate to the anima, the animus side, the unconscious and conscious coming together. And the incomplete states can show up as conflicting images, two like people in a dream in conflict, two like things, because they tend to relate to two like forces, parallel lines, things of that sort that are not forms of unity. Also, wholeness and completion tends to show up as circles and complete squares and such in your dreams, according to some of the patterns that Jung saw in his dreams. Whereas, as was mentioned this morning, missing elements like number three, partial parts of squares, partial parts of whole circles and things like that can represent elements of incompletion in your dream. So let's take a look at how some of this might show up in a dream, particularly the centering motif. This one goes to the concept that Jung talked about, is new concepts spontaneously arising from the unconscious. When a person's faced with a new concept, the conscious has to shift its focus, the ego has to shift its focus, the personality has to shift. So here's the dreamer was embracing a new spiritual belief that was in conflict and threatening the teaching of his Catholic upbringing. Now that's not happening to anyone here, I'm sure. Here was the dream. I was in an airplane which landed in a spiral motion in the rim of a large circle in a Latin American village. The individual who dreamed this was Latin American, and Spanish and Catholic religion was dominant there. In the center of the circle was a priest dressed in black, protecting the village from my intrusion. The airplane in this case was this new spiritual idea spiraling into the unconscious, and his old center was going to fight it off. So immediately the dream laid out the conflict for him, but you could see the unconscious forces taking place here, trying to bring that new center for the consciousness into play by spiraling in with the airplane. Archetypes of conscious and unconscious origin. These are some other patterns Jung talked about in dreams, but he indicated through many of his works how, as you're experiencing your dream, things in your conscious ego, in the realm of your consciousness, tends to show up more in the right field of view, perhaps a movement in that direction. In the illuminated areas, it's like the light bulb switches on in the cartoon when you're conscious of something. And the ego is typically the character you generate. Of course, now dreams don't always follow these rules, but these are just some general patterns that we're seeing. In the unconscious tends to be more to the left and into the darkness. And most of the unknown characters in the dream, you notice in those dreams I mentioned earlier, the unknown shadow characters came from the left. They were dark. They were shadow-like. They came out of the darkness. Let me give you just an example of a dream that might illustrate that. And again, dreams aren't going to do it just because we had it up here. But these are patterns that tend to show up in dreams and can kind of help you a little bit when you're working with your dreams. When the character's coming from your left, you go, maybe that's a shadow-like character. So here's a case. In life, this person was concerned with an attitude he had displayed before. He was with a group. He had displayed this attitude with the group, which shocked him. It was a shadow side coming out. It just totally shocked him that he had done this, but everybody loved it. Okay? So now he had something new to deal with. So he dreamed, he says, I was trying to get rid of this young, assertive male who approached me from the left. Here comes the shadow side. I didn't like the offensive way he was acting. He said, and suddenly a shadowy character also came in from the left and argued with me to give him a chance. This is a very kindly, dark, shadowy character came in and said, let's give this guy a chance. You know, it worked. You know, it worked yesterday. Come on, don't immediately put him down. And so finally the dreamy ghost gave in. He says, when he gave in, the man walked off to the right down a brightly lit path of sunlight. So you tend to see these directions that Jung observed playing themselves out in our dreams. Again, you can't make the dreams do this, but they're just nice observations that can sometimes help you orient yourselves in the dream. Color can also be an archetype. As I mentioned, I did content analysis research on color on 25,000 dreams from two databases. One of them was the database from Santa Cruz, and the other one was a database that we privately collected, me and another guy, from a group of long-term journalists. And the data came out identical in both cases. One of them was from 16,000 dreams, which you see here. Another was 18,000 dreams, and they agreed within a percent. But these are the colors that people mostly dream of. A near equal quantity of black and white. Not I dreamed in black and white, or my dream is colorless, but I dreamed of the color black and white, or a pattern of black and white. The next four grouping of four colors was red, yellow, blue, and green in almost equal quantities. And everything else was pretty well down below 5%, except brown seemed to be in more dreams. And it was the same for men and women. Men and women dreamed the same amount of color, and they dreamed of the same colors, except women dreamed of a couple percent more blue and men a couple percent more red. But Jung paid attention to these colors. He observed these data. He didn't have this giant database, but he observed the importance of an equal amount of black and white in your dreams, a merging of those, which he assigned the aspect of an integration of the conscious and unconscious mind. It was a huge force that was taking place in dreams that Jung talked about. And notice it's that huge force that was dominant in our dreams in terms of color. The next grouping that Jung talked about, both Jung and Pearls talked about this. They called them the psychological primaries, red, yellow, blue, and green. And Jung attributed to those not only the four functions of consciousness that he talked about, but a sense of completion in the dream. When something is forming into a completion, a wholeness, a balance, a new state, a new truth, a new belief within yourself, these four colors will often show up. So you'll not only get these symbols of wholeness, but you'll get the red, yellow, blue, and green. That can be really helpful because if you're dreaming along and you have red, yellow, and blue in some sort of pattern and there's no green, then maybe that's a hint that that's something in your life, an aspect that you need to work on for wholeness. So these can be useful even in our dream work as well as just a curiosity. Here's an example of how the colors showed up in a dream relating to completion and renewal. I learned I was leaving a very large college I had attended. A woman was stuffing all kinds of colorful red, yellow, and blue-green fabrics into my bag. It says, I opened the door, and to my surprise, the hallway and room was empty, and workwomen were beginning to paint everything white. I felt like this was the ending of something and the beginning of something in my life. So here the dream was defining those exactly as Jung defined them, the completion of something, the new beginning, the whiteness. There's another set of archetypes that are very important. These are the archetypes of transcendence. It's a pattern that Jung saw, which related to abandoning the old self, searching for a new self, reversing misconceptions that stand in the way of accepting the new self and emerging with a new view. And he called these patterns of death and rebirth. And they sort of are the death of the ego, search for a new self. Something comes into your dreams to compensate, which is this new awareness, this guidance, this wisdom from behind the dream. And then out of that comes a rebirth of the new self. Death of the ego, you can see this in your dreams as dying, descending, going underground, going into darkness, being trapped, fall and winter. You'll see this in your dreams. Search for self, journey, lost, trying to find your way home, a maze, a puzzle, a problem. Now, compensation is where the message comes into play, where you get actual guidance like we've seen in a couple of the examples I've given. Events that reverse thinking or outcome, these are surprises in the dream. It's like, whoa, I was going along this path trying to find my way, and all of a sudden something happened that led me in a new direction. Centering and integration symbols, when you start seeing these images that Jung recognized in dreams, and unity of opposites, where you start seeing these images of the anima and the animus beginning to integrate, etc. And then finally, rebirth is one that is the positive endings in your dreams. When you get a positive ending on your dream, look back as to what caused that ending. That may be the message. That may be the transition, the transformation. They come as an emergence-type symbols in dreams, light, white, clear colors, birth, baby eggs, all these renewal-type symbols in dreams. And this was a cycle that Jung recognized occurs in dreams. So it's nice to kind of know the imagery, because you can sort of see your dreams play this out. Here's an example, a death of the old myth and rebirth of the new, the old myth being the old belief about self. Jung said that one of the functions of dreams is to compensate for our misconceptions about ourselves and about life, to try to bring them more into alignment with reality. So here's the person's old myth. I have no future. It's all over for good. She had some real problems with personal relationships, real problems on her job, all coming all at once. So she dreamed, I dreamed a building fell on me and I was crushed in the rubble. All went dark and I stopped breathing. I knew that I was dead. It was all over. There was no future. Then suddenly the dream did a twist. Said, then I became another person in the dream who was strong and determined and dug my body out of the rubble. Suddenly I came back to life and realized I could go on. It was her that dug her out of the dream. It wasn't somebody else. So the message is obvious here. She definitely has it within herself to go on. Now, if a dream contains an inner wisdom and guidance, then how do we understand it? First thing is to expect a dream to first reveal our misconceptions, things that leave us stuck. Here's an example. Woman, one of my workshops early on when I was teaching at Richland, he says, I have a recurring dream of being terribly angry with my husband, who I was always running away from in the dream. These dreams continued into one night I turned around and faced my husband and looked into his face. It was my father's face. An obvious projection, and the first thing the dream needs to do is reveal our projections, reveal our misconceptions. Here's another example. In expecting the message to be figurative, a parable, the message I got when I was floating up in the balloon for NASA was kind of direct. It just said, hey, relax and don't control it. But most messages don't come that literal. They come as metaphors and parables, much like the Bible. They come in parable form. So look for them in that form, or you might get fooled by the message. Here's an example. I dreamed that it was the end of the world and Christ was coming in the skies, the Holy Trinity. But Christ appeared as a trinity of Santa Clauses, which merged as one, as the Holy Trinity, and began pouring gifts from an urn. They were invisible, but I felt the gifts hit me. So I ran. They were gifts of love. Now, the misconception the dream was trying to deal with here is that this person felt that God is like Santa Claus. He's one who awards us with worldly gifts or for good little girls. You know, I've been good all my life. Why am I poor and have all these problems? And the message the dream was trying to get across is the gifts of God are gifts of love. And the lessons therein are sometimes painful. The message is in the metaphor. The message is in the parable, often in the dream. So when you're trying to understand your dreams, personal understanding comes by comparing the context of the dream with the context of your waking life and your feelings. So first you have to understand the dream, how it relates to your life. And then to understand the message in your dream, look for the elements of surprise, guidance, and projection. And I'll give you an example of this. Here is a dream. This person learned that his company was restructuring, and he feared his career was ending. This was the end of his career. So he had this dream that night. He says, I'm a passenger in a boat aimlessly moving down a dark underground river with no control and no way out. I heard a voice behind me. It said, no one is at the wheel. So the first thing to look for is there evidence of this transformative cycle that Jung saw? Is there a death, a journey type phase that we see in this thing? Yes, he was down deep down inside a black underground tunnel. And he was lost. All he knew had died. His career was ending. His ego supports were all gone. So there was a death of the ego that took place. So he's down in this dark underground cave looking for a way out. There's a journey. This dream went on all night in this tunnel. This journey of darkness. He'd look out the windows, seeing little bits of light, trying to figure out how to get out and what to do. And then there was this compensation, this voice that said, no one's at the wheel. It was a surprise element in the dream. Not always easy to understand what it meant by no one's at the wheel. And we'll get to that in a minute, how he took that and what he as the dream ego did. But the next thing to look for in the dream is comparing the context of the dream with your life. Might this be a picture of the dreamer's feelings? So the dreams tend to picture our feelings. And one of the techniques I use, some of you know as the six magic questions, it's a form of gestalt where you basically allow the dream to speak. You don't try to figure out what it means. You just let the images in the dream speak and answer how they feel. So I said, as this man in the boat, how do you feel in this situation? He says, I feel I'm headed for disaster. I need someone to save me. How do you feel as this rock? I feel I must hold on tight or I'll be washed away. Well, how do you feel as this wheel on the boat that this person talked about? He says, I'm the wheel which once steered the direction of the boat. Now no one is using me or even knows what I can do. Now, those aren't statements by the guy in the boat, the rock, and the wheel. Those are statements that he's making about his real life. He was a big boss. He was a big wheel, which once steered the direction of his division. And now the new management doesn't even know exists. He felt he had to hold on tight and stay in this company and do everything he could to make management recognize him. He needed somebody else to save him. What does the inner wisdom say? The inner wisdom says, no one's at the wheel. And he took that to mean, oh, maybe I should grab the wheel and drive the boat myself. Take charge of my life. And guess what happened when he did? This was the inner guidance that came forth. When we look for the element of surprise in the dream, we're looking for a reversal or altering of expectations. For guidance, we're looking for a new awareness or alternative, positive endings. We're looking for something to project or reinforce the actions in the dream. From a surprise standpoint, there was a realization that was known as the wheel controlling the direction of the boat. The guidance was, the thought from the guiding voice was, why don't you take charge and steer? So he got a thought along with this message. It was like, no one's at the wheel, maybe I should take charge and steer. The positive ending, what happens is when the ego gets it, the dream will usually end positively to help reinforce that. So when he took hold of the wheel in the dream, the boat emerged from this beautiful ice cave into this beautiful setting to sort of reinforce the rightness of that action. So the dream message the ego got in this case, and the dream ended positively to reinforce it. But now, be aware that the guidance often is not that direct. It's often just a question for you to answer. Here's a case of that. This woman said, I had a recurrent dream for years that I was being pursued by a monster lurking in the darkness. One night I was trapped up against a wall. I turned around and faced the monster and said, what are you going to do with me? And the monster said, I don't know, lady, it's your dream. Okay, thank you.